Happy Halloween, everybody. Welcome to the third and final installment of our annual Cinema Spooktacular 3.
The third annual.
What? Well,
333-666.
You just fucked up the reveal. It's the Cinema Spooktacular 3, The Search for Spook. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And we've got the... We saved the best for last, literally. All three of these films were interesting. Some of them were... they're ambitious. Two of them, I think, are unabashed successes. One I have problems with, but it's still an interesting, spooky thing. There's some definite spines being tingled here. I thought we would change things up and talk about, since I like all these movies, and I know some of these definitely are going to be ones that people haven't seen, I thought we could just begin with a real brief non-spoiler discussion of each one in turn, and then we'll do a deep dive later on, and people can use the time codes in the podcast description to jump around as they wish.
That sounds nice.
So first up, we watched The Girl with All the Gifts, which I had heard a couple of times on Reddit mentioned as a really good zombie film.
Yeah.
This was a film made in 2016, directed by Colm McCarthy, which was, this was his first a major movie.
Okay.
And it was written by Mike Carey, who wrote the novel of the same name back in 2014. And this movie is essentially The Last of Us, the movie.
Right.
If you're not familiar with The Last of Us, its take on, its twist on zombie lore was it's a fungal infection.
Mm-hmm.
Cordyceps, I believe, is the type of fungus that infects many different types of insect life.
And this is a real thing?
It's a real thing. And like the things this virus this fungus does is crazy. Like if you're a bullet ant and you get infected by this, it causes you to irrationally climb to the highest surface, clamp your jaws onto it, and then die there, in which case a spore emerges from your head shortly later, and then you're up at a high place and it carries the spores on to other places to infect. It's an inherently creepy concept, and it gives a like the first like real, this isn't reanimated, these aren't people that are reanimated from the dead, this is a fungal infection that will be fatal, and it's very contagious. And the video game is really frightening, and a year later, this novel got written. So that's the premise of the movie. It's post-apocalyptic, so we're about 20 or 30 years into the future.
Yes.
And humanity is just really hanging on by a thread. And the movie, I don't want to spoil anything, but it opens with this bizarre scenes of children being restrained to these like armored wheelchairs.
Right. Yeah.
Their heads strapped down, their arms and legs strapped down, and being wheeled into a classroom where they all cheerfully greet their teacher.
One of them in particular. But I really appreciate that they do this thing where, because coming off of watching The Golden Compass, where every scene is just exposition, this just lets it slowly unfold in front of you.
Yeah, no one explains shit to you, because why would they? They're in this world, it makes sense. You have to just observe patiently to kind of piece together what's going on. I thought all the performances are really good. This movie was made for under $4 million, and it looks pretty amazing for all that.
And it's got an incredible cast to it.
Yep. And
so, I mean, if you're not familiar with The Last of Us, I think it's still a interesting new story you'd appreciate.
Yeah. And even if you are interested in The Last of Us, it's a pretty good... It shares a lot of the DNA, but yet it has some crucial kind of twists and changes on the central premise as well.
Yeah.
The only thing I can say negative about this is there are a couple times in the plot that requires the heroes to act unfathomably stupid. Especially given the context of this world for the events to continue to transpire.
Right. You do have to squint your... It makes you really think about the rules in a way that I don't want to.
And that might be...
If I got to think about get rules lawyer on a movie I'm watching, I don't...
I read some discussion that might imply that a lot of this stuff is directly due to the adaptation of the longer novel, that they did some narrative shortcuts to get essentially the entire story in. So, fine. But I just like... Every time I see stuff like that, I'm like, I feel like a couple more days of elbow grease mentally on the plot, on the script, and you could have smoothed that stuff over. But otherwise, it's a really great zombie flick.
Yeah, I liked it.
Highly recommend it. Let's talk about Tigers Are Not Afraid. This is a 2017 Mexican crime fantasy film
I thought this came out this year.
No. I think it's just got a North America release through Shudder and I think the Roku channel. This movie requires a bit of digging to find. I do know that Shudder gets a free 7-day trial, which is how we watch this movie. This was on our list. You had put it on our list, and I'm like, Tiger's Not Afraid. I don't know what that sounds like. Are We Not Cats? And I had a mixed opinion of Are We Not Cats. But then I read the synopsis where it's like a ghost story involving a Mexican city that's been ravaged by the drug war. And I'm like, holy shit, that sounds like an amazing experience. And yeah. I really, really love this movie. And it's been haunting me for days.
Yeah. And I have a bad habit of slipping in like mostly psychological horror thrillers. Mm-hmm. And I thought that this would be a lot of that, but it's a lot like it has some of the same DNA as Pan's Labyrinth with the imagination of children and what's real and what's not real. But I loved this movie.
I think it also shares, and this might be a bit of a spoiler if you think too much about it, but it also shares a lot of the DNA with What Lies Beneath in, you know, the relationship between the spooks and the protagonists.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the thing about this movie is it's 90% a very young child cast. Like these, like I think the oldest is kind of like a Millie Bobby Brown type. She might be 12 or 13.
Yeah.
All the way down to like a 4 or 5 year old.
Right. And they're all amazing actors.
They crush every fucking thing that they have to do. It's unfucking believable. Seeing these little kids running around with guns, seeing them, you know, it's funny because it opens up with a school shooting. But in this, it's not some deranged maniac just going through. This is just a neighborhood caught up in a drug war. And then the little girl goes home and she like just passes by dead bodies that the police are investigating. Mm-hmm. It's really, I mean, that's one of the reasons I like it, because like as much as I hate movies that I think glorify the drug culture, like what's that movie?
Sicario.
The Sicarios, or like make it look cool or badass. I really like shows like The Bridge or this one that kind of lays bare like the real horror that we subject the country to, and a small part because of our drug enforcement policy, which makes us also miserable back home. It's a hell of a thing, and this movie does a great job at illustrating that cost, and also has some solid like creepy things, solid like environmental horror, solid psychological horror, and just some really good ghost effects. I think this movie is my favorite movie from the Spooktacular this year.
Owen is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good stack of three, especially with Midsummer upcoming, but I don't think I've ever seen anything like this movie before.
So
highly recommend.
It's worth checking out Shudder for 7 days. I think that I'm hoping that we can get to see a little bit of Creepshow, because we watched a couple trailers for it. We got interested in the Creepshow because of Rob Schraub's involvement on Harmontown, and he's directed and written one of those episodes, and it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like a lot of return to classic Creepshow. Anyway, we also saw the horror hit of the year, 2019, written and directed by Ari Aster. Aster? Aster. Midsommar. Midsommar. This is the second, or this is the first movie that he released after his 2017 Hereditary.
Hereditary, right.
I had a very mixed review of Hereditary, and I find myself having a very mixed review of this. Like, there's a couple points in the movie where I'm like, oh, this is going to be really fucking good. This might be like The Witch good. And then there's a couple points in the movie where I'm like, this fucking movie is completely lost to me.
It's wild. It's over the top for a lot of it. But
yeah.
And it's got genuine scares. And I think that it could benefit from some deep digging, because there's a lot of like symbolism and runes and rituals happening here, which I think a lot of them are real in some way, but have been remixed into this. And it was good. I liked it.
I mean, there's shocking imagery. There's stuff that's very uncomfortable in this film, and it's like it's also very long. It's like a 2.5 hour movie, and I guess there's a director's cut, which makes it about 3.
Yeah.
And I'm kicking myself because I just found out that that got released on Blu-ray literally yesterday.
Right.
So we could have gone for the 3 hour version, and I'm never watching this movie again. So
okay.
I don't know. Like I said, I found myself swinging back and forth between this movie's excellent and this movie's crap, and I just kind of landed in the middle at meh, and it's largely because of the same reason Hereditary. I just don't buy that anyone acts the way anyone in this film does.
Mm-hmm.
Like in isolation, and there's some the best parts of the movie I think are like the really uncomfortable and terrible relationship amongst the main characters.
The best parts are?
Yeah. Like, that's the best part. It's kind of like, it's some of the best parts of Mother, where it's just very, very uncomfortable and bad interpersonal interactions.
Right.
But, yeah, I just don't, like, when... It's kind of like in Friday the 13th, the first time Jason kills someone in a cabin, everyone should just leave the should just leave the camp, right? Like, this has a Friday the 13th problem, but it wants me to take it seriously.
Right. It feels like a lot of the problems between those two are what propelled the movie into motion to begin with. Well, so it needed to be there, I still think I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely worth watching, especially if you liked Hereditary, because I know a lot of people did, and a lot of people overlook the problems I had with it or didn't even detect them. Mm-hmm. So, definitely check it out. All right, time for housekeeping. And guys and gals, I'm not going to lie. There's just too much good TV to keep up with right now. Too much for any one human to keep up with. Yet, we valiantly try. If you want to keep up with any of these, just search for the show name wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. We Do is our Watchmen podcast. 2 weeks in, it's been a total delight. We're giving it the full treatment, instant live take and talk podcast for club members on Sunday night, and a full podcast with recap and analysis each Tuesday. Pickle Me This is our Rick and Morty podcast, wrapping up a season 3 coverage. It releases every Tuesday. This week, we're talking Morty's Mind Blowers with Ify Wadue from the Maximum Fun Network. He's a really fun interview, and we talked about whether we should stress about shifting dimensions. On our podcast, 2-Bit Encryption, we're covering the twisty and turny final season of Mr. Robot, the world's premier show about hacking, mental illness, and social alienation. Full podcast recaps every Wednesday. On American Horror Story Podcast, we are covering season 9, the 1984 season, comes out every Friday morning. Cecily and Alexis of Pin Y fame will be covering his Dark Materials on Bald Move TV starting on Monday, November 4th, but you don't have to wait now. You can download their coverage that they began last week with a review of the 2007 Golden Compass movie. Finally, if you're in the mood for spooky stories to tell in the dark, check out our newest feature, Lunch with Jim and Aaron, Reheated. This is where we release our 5-year-old club member-only lunch podcast for everyone to enjoy. This Thursday, we have the classic lunch where Jim and I turn off the studio lights and tell spooky stories from our childhood. Can your spine handle the tingle from the tale of the church on Joppa Road? Check out this week's Reheated Lunch and find out. Once again, if any of those sound good, just search for the show name wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can find them all on baldmove.com. Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
No lunch this week, as I'll be traveling on vacation, but get ready for next week when we have the rare, elusive, dare I say premium lunch with Talitha and Aaron.
And while you're waiting for the return of the king, don't forget, May is the time to switch your Patreon tiers to make sure you maintain your full benefits by June. Stop by support.baldmove.com to check your Patreon levels to see the new benefits and decide which one is right for you.
And finally, tickets are now on sale for Badass Fest 6. Come meet us live and in person, watch a mystery badass film with us, and then hear us record the podcast right there in front of you in a theater packed with Bald Move fans. Get your details and your tickets at baldmove.com/live.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com right now to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed,
we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.ballmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Do you want to get into in depth of these movies?
Yeah.
Let's start back at the girl with all the gifts. This is now going to be spoilers from this point forward. So if you want to hear our opinions about a particular movie, just use the show notes to jump forward into that time. The time gap, time deal, time code.
Time code.
The girl with all the gifts. So this movie is really good. The main actor, the lead, Sinya Nanua, is another one of these like child actors is just killing it.
What else has she been in?
I think this is her day. She was in a short film before, so this is her feature film debut.
Yeah,
and she really has a very tough job. That, you know, she's playing a child zombie that can lose control and eat people, but she's very sympathetic. She also has to sell the fact that she's like a genius level intellect.
I think all of the kids with the fungus are.
Might be.
I think they're all, you know, how they were going through the periodic table in that way to demonstrate that the whole room had that kind of advanced skill. So there's second generation of these fungal brain babies.
See, I thought some of the kids were obviously struggling with the material and she wasn't.
I mean, maybe. They're still just kids, I guess.
Right, yeah.
But some of them I thought the twist here was going to be, because she has this darkness to her, I guess. Uh-huh. Or, you know, we know that everyone hates the kids and nobody can relate to the kids except for this one teacher who almost dies from doing so at a couple of points.
I thought that she would really turn
out to be, you know, evil in some way, or that the fungus, she was more fungus than she would be human. So that's what was really, you know, doing some social manipulation.
No, I think that was one of the excellent parts is by introducing us from the child zombies POV, we really got to kind of hate some of the humans, and for probably completely unfair reasons, because it's like 20 to 30 minutes into the movie before you see like why these kids are being restrained, because they look like just normal children. They're being treated like Jeffrey Dahmer, and they're being dehumanized. Like, people pointedly refer to them as it and as abortions.
Right.
That's what they're like, you know, like round up the abortions and like Jesus fucking Christ. But in the context of this film, and they're being vivisected, you know, like just awful things happening. Like, how in the fuck are people justifying this? And then you find out later that, you know, were it not for this hormonal blocker that the humans apply every day, that these things instantly turn into savage flesh-eating monsters as soon as they get a whiff of a human. And the physical transformation they go through, where they start chomping their eyes roll back in their head, and they start chomping their teeth, is pretty horrific.
The clicky clacky noises.
Yeah.
These kids they have doing it. It's so visceral.
I love Glenn Close's kind of like button down scientific Cruella de Vil that she's playing here.
Evil old Ripley.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, you know, these aren't children. These are funguses pretending to be human. And so the like at the.
But you're right. To your point, she does treat Melanie differently in the beginning. And always, like, Melanie is more gifted than the rest of the children.
Yeah.
Because I just remember that she would come to her and ask her for, like, numbers. And then those children would disappear.
Mm-hmm. I wondered why she was special like that, though. I think that, like, having her play this random number game was, like, maybe Glenn Close's character way of guaranteeing that she would be around last, because she kind of knew instinctually that she was special and she didn't want to...
Not a hard puzzle to figure out. Number between 1 and 20, there's exactly 20 of you. She figured it out within one number.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I don't know.
Maybe she was just like extra sociable.
Maybe. But like, that's the thing. It's like, if they were so like, how many times there's still a lot of things that are not clear to me. Like, how many times have they gone through different groups of children, because she intimates that she has done this a lot, but she's really close. And in fact, when she vivisects this girl, that it'll be the last one that they have to do. Like, this is the cure.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So Melanie was special again, because she keeps repeating this throughout the whole movie. You know, when Glenn Close gave the number four, or when she gave Glenn Close the number four, she knew she'd be chosen for something. And she like really didn't want to do it, but she did it anyway, and made sure that Melanie was the one that came with them when they escaped the compound.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Melanie can also stop herself after one feeding and she's satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple things I don't think, maybe I wouldn't mind watching this again to try to like test some of these theories out, but like that was kind of my imagining that this has been, because also the main character of the teacher played by Gemma Arterton. She said, "I'm tired of doing this." Well, it's like, if this is only one child, so they must have had several classes and several.
But also she had the naivety of a teacher that was newly hired or transferred to this station.
Yeah, like I said, there's
and also we join the story when they're within one day of being overrun. Their defenses are so low and they're running out of the gel stuff.
I mean, yes, you're right. But it's like, that's like holding against the movie that they're beginning it at like the most crucial junction.
No, I meant that it's that far advanced in the apocalypse, if you want to call it that. In the processes, experiments they've been doing, that they've been doing it for so long, they're running out of supplies, their defenses are falling. It has to have been happening for a while.
Speaking of the fall of the base, there was a young soldier played by Naomi's, actor that plays Naomi on
The Expanse.
Which I thought was kind of nice. She gets a little role there.
She dies.
There's a lot of just, I feel like, really dumb decisions.
Yes.
That propel the plot forward, and like things that just don't make any sense. Like there's this base that's being overrun by soldiers, and it looks like as soon as like, you know, like these soldiers are just getting ganged up by all these crazy fungus infected humans. And then Gemma Arterton is just kind of wandering around, not getting attacked or killed at all. In fact, she seems like more under in danger by like the soldiers themselves, which causes Melanie to freak out and attack one of them, which is the first time I think she tastes human flesh. Mm-hmm. I thought that was going to be a real turning point for her character, but it turns out, nah, not really. Nope. Like if she's not hungry, she doesn't have to eat you.
Yes.
Even with or without the blocker.
Yeah, but she's mindful about it, about who she chooses to eat, even when she's hungry.
Yeah.
Which makes her the special one.
Yeah. But they do things like there's this one scene, like as soon as they get out of the base, so they evacuate with the most racist against zombies sergeant, two or three kind of like faceless
grunts. The guy from Hot Fuzz, which is hard to get over.
Yeah, the guy that plays the twin kind of creeps from Hot Fuzz. Glenn Close, the teacher, Melanie, the zombie girl, and two or three other faceless grunts are just going to be killed along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep engineering these events like they stop to clear a tree from a path, and the sergeant says clearly, make sure we're silenced because we don't want to make a lot of noise out here. And there's this guy walking around with his rifle with no silencer on, a zombie shows and he fires bark, bark, bark.
Not even that. I think it was just a tree branch crunched and he just turns and shoots.
Yeah, he
just
overreacted
nothing.
And didn't check his target. And I'm like, well, okay, dumbass on him for shooting, but like literally everyone could have been like, hey, yo, you don't have your silencer on.
Yeah.
Do you see these big 7-inch cans that we got on the rifles that we can all visually? It's like, you don't have one. It's not like he drew his like service sidearm and like fired. Yeah. It's
there's only three of us. We'll check each other. I check you. You check him. You check me.
Yeah, and then there's like later on, like so Glenn Close's scientist character. They're in this. They go to this city, and there's a really tense scene of them kind of sneaking through this city of these zombies because it's very much like, well, we've got the scent blocker on, and these are kind of like zombies in standby mode. As long as we move slowly and we don't make eye contact, we'll be fine. But they get through it, and there's this big mass of dead zombies in the center of the city that have grown into this big fruiting mass of fungus. And there's all these seed pods. And Glenn Close explains to Melanie that, like, if one of these things would rupture open, it'd be the end of the world. And Melanie's like, well, what if they... Or like, how do you rupture them open? And like, Glenn Close takes and smashes one on the ground. And I'm like,
not like that.
I get being a scientist and being very sure that the seed pod is tough enough to do that. But like, mutations are a real thing. Like, what if this thing's coding was like a little bit weaker? Like, I've read a thread on Reddit.
Like, you're talking to a girl who has fungus growing through her brain right now.
Yeah. But I've read this thread on Reddit where it's like scientists have talked about like shocking science experiments that have gone wrong. Like, for example, there's this old like to demonstrate like a like something about the insulating properties of water, steam, or a scientist will take his hand and get it like submerge it in water and then dip his hand into a cauldron of boiling lead. And the water instantly flashes to steam, right? And it insulates your hand, and if you do it quick enough, like, you don't get any lead on it, and you don't get burned. I guess science teachers do this. And I'm like, but why? If you do something extremely wrong...
I was freaking out over here, because I thought you were about to tell me something went wrong.
Well, one guy said there's another one you can do where you take liquid nitrogen, and you take, like, a teaspoon of it, and you put it in your mouth, and you, like, balance it on your tongue, and it just evaporates, because it is literally floats on a layer of its own sublimation. Uh-huh. But this guy said that, like, when he did it, the vapor in his mouth tickled his throat, and he reflexively swallowed it.
No!
He ended up being in an emergency room for, like, 3 fucking months. Getting his throat resectioned. And I'm like, again, Glenn Close, I'm sure you're 99.9% sure that this seed pod cannot be ruptured on the ground. But if you're talking about the death of all humanity, what the fuck? What the fuck? That's the biggest balancing liquid nitrogen on your tongue of all time.
Well, here's the thing. Do you think that Glenn Close was also, you know, trying to subliminally telegraph to her? Was
relatable.
She trying to telegraph to her that, you know, this is a kill switch? Like, if I die, nobody else is going to do this. So you may as well just
let
the spores go and take over.
I mean, it's
because she's right at the end. The next generation is humans who are better. They're adaptable.
So they're evolving quickly. So that's the twist. I was going to go through talking about some other moments where there's one other moment that drove me crazy.
Yeah.
So they let one of their faceless dudes out to forage. One of their faceless, grunts out to go scavenge for food, and they show him how to go out the front door. And he goes Same guy didn't suppress his rifle. And then, like, literally 15 seconds later, Melanie's like, "I'm hungry. I need to go eat." And they let her out the thing. And I'm like, it turns out this didn't happen. But isn't that the fucking stupidest thing you've ever heard?
Yeah, like, it's like, I'm going to go take a shit. Uh-huh. And then you come in and you're like, can I take a shower?
Yeah.
It's kind of occupied right now.
Right. Except for, like, instead of shitting, you might, like, tear someone's throat out.
Yeah, like, probably the two things aren't going to touch, mm-hmm. but does it need to happen at the same time? Because why?
But the twist is that there is the second generation funguses that, like, and they talk, Jim would love this scene, because they talk about, Glenn Close talks about finding a hospital right after the fall of man, where there's all these babies that are covered in blood and they've ate their way out from inside their mother.
Some babies.
And these second generation, these children born in a world of fungus people have a symbiotic relationship rather than a parasitic relationship with the fungus.
Mm-hmm.
The fungus confers upon them a lot of advantages, like they can hold their breath because they don't need to the fungus metabolizes for them.
For over 1,000 seconds, did you say she caught it?
Yeah, because that's something that, like, Melanie would do for fun while she's locked in her cell. You don't understand at the time, but you later appreciate that she's, like, experimenting with holding her breath. And they have a lot of other advantages, but the chief one is that they can think. They're not, like, crazy. They have an irresistible compulsion to eat flesh, But other than that, they're as sane and capable of intelligence as you or me. And there's these packs of feral children out in the wild that's like some perverse Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Where they lay traps to like find humans, and they use complex hunting tactics, and it's really kind of vicious and amazing.
Yeah, and I want to say it's smart and not stupid that they also do things with their hair and wear clothes in a way.
Yeah, they have like, they don't have language because no one's taught them, but they definitely have culture and a way to communicate. It's very primitive, but...
Right, I could see them seeing mannequins or cereal boxes and knowing that you put clothes on, do...
But like the shapes that they paint, I would love to know the cultural significance, and I kind of want to read the novel because I wonder if they get into any of like these tribes of children's like politics and culture.
Right.
But Melanie is kind of like, because she's, I think she's larger and stronger and she's more educated and smarter than these children. So she's able to essentially become the alpha of the pack.
Yeah.
But there's this point where Melanie realizes that there's no point in saving these humans, and saving the humans through a vaccine will necessarily destroy this new form of human life. And also, you're just always going to be on the knife edge, because if these spores release, then you're dead. Melanie, like, the twist at the end is these spores only open in cases like of moisture or fire.
Oh wait, you're just gonna skip over the fact that she beat that little boy's head in with a baseball bat?
I said she became the alpha. That little girl screaming and shrieking and like physically dominating these other children and then beating the one's head in with a baseball bat, it was fucking insane.
Yeah, just a shocking act of violence from Melanie. Something... she really hates that animal part of her that has to kill to eat, unless it's an animal. And just the savagery of that, and just the Lord of the Flies type of children behaving in a way that they shouldn't ever have to is so one of the most shocking things in the movie.
But that so it's kind of like this is like an I Am Legend moment, that the vampires are going to inherit the earth, the zombies are going to inherit the earth, and the last scene is now the teacher. They've completely flipped places. The teacher is now isolated in this cell that's hermetically sealed. And then this doesn't make a lot of fucking sense, because how the hell is she going to survive if she ever walks outside? She becomes... But she... Melanie's using her as this captive teacher to teach the other zombie children like the alphabet, how to speak, how to talk. Mm-hmm. And you can see kids at all different various stages of education. Some of them are just being tamed out of the wild. Yeah. Some of them that can like make their letters. And you got the idea that they're going to reboot human civilization like one feral child colony at a time.
Yeah, it was interesting, because you could see within the children that Melanie had her own system of being able to see how far along their progression was. Like, some of them are wearing the sweatsuit jumpsuits, and some of them are still wearing bones in their hair.
Yeah, like,
did they
earn their... I couldn't tell if, like, some of them are, like, children she saved from the army base going back to do that, or some of them, like, is it, like, you earn your red hoodie when you can... use your words.
When you bring teacher can of beans.
Yeah, it's the first kind of like I guess 2019 is a pretty good year for this year is a pretty good year for me seeing a bunch of difference, because like The Kingdom was a very different take on zombies. This is a very different take on zombies. It just is amazing that you're still able to say something new with zombies in this late into the zombie cycle.
Yeah.
It's fewer and far between. And like Zombieland 2 is the opposite of that, where it's just like completely out of ideas. But there are ideas out there to be had. Shall we move on to Tigers Are Not Afraid?
Yes.
This movie is haunting for two reasons. One, it's got genuinely scary ghosts. Who are disturbing, and essentially since the protagonists are children, we've talked about this on other spectaculars, children are the perfect target for spooky things, because they're naturally innocent, they believe in ghosts anyway, and there's a scary thing that it's one thing for an adult to be menaced by a ghost, but child is just inherently scarier. So now you get this whole pack of children being terrorized by these ghosts. It's a very scary concept.
And the third thing, it's got some shocking violence.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the other thing that's haunting about this is just these children. they're fucking thousand yard stares and the things that they go through and how sad their existence is.
Yeah, like it pains me to think about how these they got this kind of performance out of these children.
Yeah. Yeah. And to know, I mean, that's the other thing is to know that this isn't like a dystopian future. This is the reality of a lot of parts south of our border.
Yes, this is really happening in places.
Like there are whole towns that are taken over by these vicious cartels. And I mean, just do Google, you know, cartel violence to current year, and you will see just unimaginably shocking, horrific things. And these children raising themselves. And it's so sad that like the girl, their school gets shot up. She goes home and sees a couple dead bodies. She gets to home and her mom just never doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she gets hungry and a day and a night passes and her mom's still not showing up. And she knows what's got happening.
Right.
But it's like it's her fear of going outside into the streets versus the hunger in her belly.
Yeah.
And it's just really fucking sad.
Yeah. And we know, I mean, we know what's happening. We know what has happened immediately because there's this trail of blood that follows her home after the school.
Yeah, that's one of the conceits is there's these rivulets of blood that are like navigating like Tron light cycle straight lines up walls. And they kind of foreshadow death.
It's kind of, I feel like it's following her around and maybe leading the ghosts to her.
Yeah,
at some point.
Yeah, it's like I would love to see this movie again too because I wasn't entirely sure what the metaphor with that is, but it,
right,
if it's just a creepy detail, it works on that level.
Yeah, and you could see the dress that was hanging out to dry that had the blood blossom out of the chest as if, you know, that's what happened to her mother, which we find out is exactly what happened to her mother later.
Yeah. But they have this thing where like the leader of the child gang Shine steals this gun and cell phone from one of these sicarios early on, and it turns out he wants to keep the gun because that's power on the streets, like that's how he can protect his brothers. But he also the cell phone is something that puts him in danger because there's proof that one of the local politicians is tied to the gang on that. So it's causing children to be persecuted throughout the city, but he won't give it up because it's got this cartel also abducted his mother. And I guess they take pictures of all the women that they abduct. And it's the only picture he's got of his mom,
yeah,
which itself is like so fucking sad and tragic.
It really is. Cause it's not a great picture that you want to look at with pleasant memories, but it's the only one.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Shreya has these three wishes that her teacher gave her.
I forgot about that concept.
When there was that school shooting outside, she gave her these three pieces of chalk, which were her wishes. But
they're like the monkey paw type of wishes.
Yeah, and in that moment, that teacher knew and thought she was going to die.
Uh-huh.
She did not, but it was so effective in that way.
Yeah. And how, like, I love the monkey paw aspect of it where the wishes kind of came true, but like with horrific consequences or very scary ways. And there's also like some moments of like genuine joy, like when the children flee. So they're staying on this rooftop, but then the cartel members.
It's just kind of cool in the Lost Boys way. They built their own
little
thing.
They had this like a permanent pillow fort and like
that
one
little boy is living
in
a TV
with
his own like light strung up in there.
Yeah. And they've got this mythology like the. Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of myself. But they flee from that place and they break into this. Essentially mansion. It's, you know, like where wealthy people lived back in the day when this was a thriving city. You know, you can kind of see it feels very Lord of the Rings. It's like when the Fellowship is tromping through one of those abandoned old citadels of the Numenoreans. You know, it's like, look at this grandeur that once was, but they're just like completely they're running around and say, you know, they wanted a place with a zoo and a soccer field, but this place has a koi pond, which they're super charmed by, and its basement is like full of soccer balls, which they start decorating.
Yeah.
And there's like places like that where it's just like really kind of funny and charming and almost Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got like when the littlest kid gets shot and killed. And them just
when any of the kids get shot and killed.
Well, any of the kids get shot and killed, but like the littlest one especially, they're like little funeral ceremony, and then when he shows up as a ghost and talks about being cold And he's got this like the little toy tiger he always carried around in life. His Nalus is animated spirit too.
He's kind of like a Calvin and Hobbes type. He makes me think of that. And he's already seen some things, so he's not speaking.
Yeah, he's traumatized.
His entire life has been just absolutely brutal.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I meant by having this what lies beneath vibe, is that like the scary ghost is actually an ally to the protagonist and trying to warn the protagonist. And, you know, it keeps on saying like, Estrella, bring them to me, bring them to us. And it turns out what the ghost is trying to say is like the cartel has this old, I think, abandoned hotel where they are storing the bodies in the basement. And the children eventually decide to give the phone back to the lead politician / cartel member.
Chino.
And he wants to meet him back at this murder place because he's going to murder some people, including them there.
Uh-huh.
And it all winds up that Estrella falls into the corpse hole, which is extremely, extremely scary. But then out of all the bodies, her mom, who's wrapped in this plastic bag, reanimates, and it's like scary, but it's also like no longer threatening because it's her mother, and we know it's a friendly ghost now.
And she gets the bracelet from her.
Yeah, because there's this bracelet that like Estrella's always wanted that has birds on it. Mm-hmm. And her mom says, well, I'll give it to you when you're a big girl. And now it like magically transfers from the mom's wrist to hers.
She doesn't want to be a big girl.
And then, you know, Chino gets lured into this pit by the cell phone that he's chasing, and the door slams shut, and you don't see, but you hear what the ghosts are doing to him, and it seems like he got served out fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
Oh, my God. Lots of tears, lots of scares, lots of held breath. This is by far my favorite movie that we watched during the spectacular.
Yeah, it had amazing... I mean, even the amazing effects...
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. The blood and the graffiti coming to life, those are all... And I love the way that Shine would just use the graffiti as his own kind of diary, you know, leave memorials or moments of happiness of him and his gang.
All that mural of him painting, like, saying goodbye tomorrow.
Right, because they're still kids and they're still playing games and, you know, having moments of fun in between.
They have these super tough exteriors, but then, like, when they're places where they feel safe and secure, they instantly turn into little kids.
Right, when they watch TV, they're still watching cartoons. And...
Yeah, which is a huge sorrow factory if you're an adult, like, sobbing at some of this stuff.
Yeah, and it just also makes you wonder, you know, what happens to Estrella at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Because where does she go? She
it
didn't
seemed get... like a fantasy sequence. Like, I wonder if she actually made it out of there or if she's in the afterlife because she walks past this real whole-ass tiger into this, like, endless Elysian field.
Yeah, which could represent happiness and, you know...
Her getting out of the city. But, like, yeah, what is the prospects of her? Maybe she'll try to cross the border and get asylum in the United States.
She's locked up in a cage in Texas right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple things I don't... Like, I want to go back and see if I can figure out, like... There's this little dragon that's kind of, like, that is also kind of one of her totems that's following her
around. It's part of the case. It's part of the phone case. So that guy's phone that they were carrying around, he had this bump out dragon.
Okay.
So the dragon would escape and fly around and then it would come back. Like one scene, you see it reattach.
Is that okay.
And the birds she follows are the bracelet.
Yeah.
Apart.
I got that. Okay. I'm not sure exactly what the blood rivulets are actually doing.
I don't know what they're doing either.
Is that the violence connected to the children or is this the ghost influence or?
Yeah, it starts with the tiger that Shine is looking at when he can't kill whatever that guy's name, Kako. When he can't kill him, that's the first time we see the blood, but it's not connected to Estrella at all.
I highly recommend it. It's worth the 7-day trial on Shudder.
Hell yeah, it is.
Check it out or fucking download it if you can find it somewhere. I don't care. It's a movie worth watching. Let us talk about... A lot of people wanted us to see this back when it first came out, wanted it to be a bald movie. I forget why, what scheduling conflict or what other movie we saw instead. But we eventually saw... we knew this was going to be one of the crown jewels of the spooktacular. It turns out it's the final one. It's the Hammer. I feel
it's a flower crown, not a crown jewel.
It's a giant heaped up three-story flower crown. I just found the same problems with Midsommar as I did with Hereditary, which is I have a hard enough time buying that a cult like this would exist in modern society, but then when I have modern society people enter it and they see these people killing themselves in this bizarre fashion, and then and committing suicide and doing all these like bizarre rituals with, who stays here? Who the fuck stays here? The things I found really effective about the movie was the just terrible relationship that the protagonist had with her boyfriend, and how like passive aggressive nice guy this guy was to all of his friend circle. Like, it's just so fucking awkward to watch like the first third of this movie, because it's nothing but this guy who doesn't love this girl anymore, but he's too much of a pussy to break up with her, and he's too much in love with the idea of him being a good guy that, well, I can't possibly abandon her now that her sister's committed suicide and taken her parents out with her.
Right. He's like season one Andy from Parks and Rec. I feel the complete opposite of you on both of those points. One, the way they got here and ancient cults, or not cult, yeah, cults and rituals being pervasive into modern times, I think is really interesting. Like, what was the name of that? The Forest? I think it was the Netflix one from a few years ago where the four guys go hiking.
Yet. Yeah, yeah.
You should see that one.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Maybe
in a way.
Spectacular.
In a way that's like the cult. The thing there is that it's backwoods people that have never joined society. So it's a little different from this, where these people, presumably outside of this 9-day festival, no, they always live in this insular community. So yeah, it works for me. I just don't know why they would ever allow outsiders in to take part, or why they don't try to make them take part more.
Uh-huh.
They allow these people to come in as students.
Well, I mean, the villagers make sense because they know they're all going to kill them at the end of this.
I know, but wouldn't you make them like more a part of the rituals, put them in like white dresses more? And because, you know, how would it have gone for the main protagonist if she did not win the dance competition? Would she just have been killed as one of the nine?
I don't know, because that's a good question. Because her being the May Queen, and they just assume that she's become one of them because...
I think she did too, but why did we not see any other previous years May Queens?
Yeah.
Makes you think that they die as part of the ritual.
Yeah. There was a dialogue where one of the male Swedish cult members mentioned that his sister had won the May Queen previously. And here's the reason. This ceremony only happens once every 90 years, right?
Yeah. There's this circle of nines.
Yeah. So, like, I think that, like, every year they have a festival on Midsommar where all the 72-year-olds die and, like, all the 18-year-olds move to the summer house and, like, they all that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
But, like, this is a once in a 90-year kind of, like, grand jubilee type of cycle. So, yeah, I guess, like, if it was 90 years since the last May Queen. But also, like... I don't know. They show photographs of him, and it's not like it's 100 years ago. There's like multiple photographs.
Yeah, it can't have been.
Yeah, I think this movie would be good for a second
watch.
Isn't
it once a year for 9 days?
Well, I thought they said there's something
about
this
happens.
Maybe
every 9 years for 9 days.
Maybe they only have to bring outsiders. Because that's the other thing, is if this happens the only reason I was on this plot to begin with is I thought it was an every 90-year thing. If they bring in four to six outsiders every fucking year and slaughter them, and they all, like, last we knew, we were going to this cool winter, weird summer festival in Sweden. There's absolutely no way this cult would be
allowed
to
exist.
Right,
they were very specific about where they were going, what they were doing. They made it clear that there wasn't any, like, internet access, but
right,
there was one of three places where he was going for his thesis project.
Yeah.
To study specifically Midsommar rituals. You're right. And there's all kinds of evidence.
Yeah.
Just check that tree.
Uh-huh. And there's like a couple other things I thought were dumb. Like, for example, that guy peeing on their sacred tree.
Come on.
He's kind of portrayed as an asshole, but holy shit, that seems really dumb.
He's just fucking oblivious, and I don't buy it. That's part of the ridiculous thing, is that just... within the last 30 minutes, you saw them scooping ashes into that tree.
Yes.
Also, it's the tree is visible from everywhere. You're right. Telling me you can't go into the woods a bit and like pee on a different tree?
Yeah.
How about the bathroom was closer?
Yeah.
At this point, it's just you're being aggressive.
But this whole thing, like once they got to the point where the old, like I thought the movie was really working well and like is really creepy when the old folks defense-strated themselves. I thought that everyone was going to be horrified, but it was going to be too late to get out because now they're part, like, don't you know you're part of festivities?
Yeah.
But when everybody's kind of like, hey, you know, we got to respect other people's cultures. And so I'm just like, no, get the fuck out of here. All right, you guys are stupid. You guys are now just teenagers in a Friday the 13th movie, and I want you all to die.
Right. Like,
and that's the thing, like, for me, like, compare this to The Tigers Are Not Afraid. Those children are all maximum sympathetic. I care deeply about every single one of them as individuals. I wanted them all to live and succeed and fucking thrive. And this movie, all the protagonists, I want to die within 30 minutes of the movie starting.
Right.
You can't generate horror when there's no connection to the main cast.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you understand that she's already in a weak place at the beginning. Because as her boyfriend explains to his friends, she's bipolar. Her sister has some issues, obviously. Maybe their parents have some issues that they pass down to them.
Yeah.
But the way she just swallows her boyfriend's shit, and then you find out later they've been together for 4 fucking years.
Yeah.
In 4 years, neither of you figured out that this is not working in a very painful way. They even say, and a bit of exposition when they're having pizza, that they don't even have sex.
Uh-huh.
It's I want the best for her because she's got it tough, but she's making it hard on me.
No, I mean, I think those relationships are...
But I guess
fairly realistic.
But it works because now she's got maximum excuse to stay with this tribe mm-hmm. forever, who can go through all of her pain with her, like literally with
right.
her.
Right, like their style, their ritual cult style of like love bombing is exactly how she operates in the real world. Like, oh, you guys are just cool screaming at ever louder in people's faces in ever louder cycles. Like, oh, I finally feel heard. Like all this weird... maladjusted, like you need some therapy and medication behavior in the Western world as seen in this Swedish cult as like, oh, this is just how we do things.
I just don't understand why she came. She's on the phone with a girlfriend who seems pretty supportive at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
You think you run it by that girlfriend like, hey, I'm going to Sweden for a month.
Do you think she would have listened to her? Because I think there's just no telling this girl.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if I would do that to any of my friends.
Her and Christian, the male protagonist, if you can call him that, are just like bad ideas incorporated. And that's one of the things is like this guy, he's just too passive aggressive. He is afraid to he offends his girlfriend because he's afraid of what the guys will think. But then he offends his guy friends because he can't say no to his girlfriend. He's just got zero spine. And then they threw in, like, in the midpoint of the movie, the idea that he's going to try to steal the thesis from Chidi from the Good Place.
Yeah.
I'm like, where the fuck did that come from?
This guy's just a piece of shit. I don't know either. He just wants an excuse. See, I'm thinking Chidi was definitely studying and horrified, but also fascinated in the Etch-a-Strup, whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The old people dying.
Uh-huh.
He knew what was going to happen. Because
did he?
Yeah, the night before they were like, tomorrow's the Etch-a-Strup, and Chidi had this look on his face like he wasn't going to tell them, but he knew. And because it's a real thing, I think he knew.
But yeah, but
and
I thought it would be some kind of symbolic ritual rather than like actually people die because he was horrified
their,
when
like,
he actually
faces
saw it.
Hammered in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's a fucking asshole for not warning her and letting her sit that one out. Because again,
I still think he knew.
It's not like her family died in a car accident. Her family just died in a horrific way.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And then also, I think that the boyfriend, Christian, I think he might be just fascinated by it.
Huh.
And I think maybe it's the allure of the redhead that makes him want to stay. So that's why he's looking for the excuse of stealing his thesis idea.
But why doesn't he just stay? Like, I don't think Chidi would. I don't think Chidi would mind if he just like.
Well, this guy's got no spine. He can't make an.
Yeah, I guess
it's such
true.
A like spineful, spineless thing to go to your friend and be like, "I'm going to steal your thesis. Also, you stole it from me."
Yeah, because he also did it behind his back. He didn't come up and say. He just essentially went to the church elders.
Yeah.
So in retrospect, why are the church elders so protective of their secrets that they knew they're going to kill all these people anyway? Like, why not, like, yeah, take all the pictures you want.
I could see not understanding how cell phone technology works, or, I mean, because they don't seem to have any of it. So
yeah, but
how
people
easily
go,
could...
like, it seems like from, like, 18 to 32, you go out into the world and have, like, this extended Rumspringa where you get educated and you partake in the world. I thought that's, like, what that phase is. Like, from 1 to 18, you're a child.
And they call it the pantsless phase.
From 18 to 32, you're in summer.
Pantsless.
And then 32 to whatever 18 years past that, you are working age, and that's when you could give back to society. And then you go to the mentor phase, and at 72, you die.
Okay.
So like they have these people go out in the real world and use cell phones and computers and technology, and like I often wonder, like, are they have trouble getting people back? Like you got to bring, you can come back, but you got to bring two people to sacrifice to our village from your friend circle. It's just such a weird cult.
Maybe.
And it's weird.
Maybe it's just like the ritual of it. Like, it's just, you just don't do it because it's rude.
Yeah.
Also, they have an oracle.
Yeah, they deliberately inbreed a severely retarded and physically disabled person that their whole job is just to scribble in a book that the elders can then interpret. But like, okay, it feels like your whole fucking compound is an exercise in inbreeding. Because
there's
50 people there. That's not enough to sustain a healthy genetic diversity and mix.
And what if this guy's sperm didn't take? What if he's sterile?
Oh, but that's what they explained. That's the other reason they bring outsiders, is so they can fuck their village girls and get that outside genetics and mixed in there. So I guess that makes sense.
Two people died.
Uh-huh.
One woman may have gotten pregnant, maybe, if that worked.
Right, if it worked, yeah.
Just FYI, guys, every time you have sex doesn't guarantee a baby.
It does when the guy eats a bloody fur burger to fall in love, and you put the rune under his bed, and she's drinking fucking acid mushroom tea. 100% fertility guaranteed in those circumstances.
Yeah, what if he just
at the height of midsummer? Are you kidding me?
What if he just like pretended to come so that he'd get the fuck out of there? Like. yeah, that works. Can I go? Can I run around naked?
Or what if he's just infertile? That happens.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But she felt the baby immediately, so.
That's the thing. Like, if this, I'm jealous of the people that were able to suspend disbelief throughout the whole movie, because if you can just go from scene to scene to scene, just like Hereditary, the tension builds and builds and builds, and it just turns crazy. And if you're all in at the point where this movie turns crazy, then it's like a best case kind of Wicker Man, you know, like it's a much better version of like not even the Nick Cage joke version, but the classic Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
But like every single set piece, I had an ejection point where I'm like, nope, I don't buy it. Nope. Or if the cult's too weird, or these people's reaction to it is too weird and unnatural and forced. People aren't seeing obvious danger signs, like, you know, people just disappearing one at a time under hysterical circumstances. And the villagers like, oh, yeah, person was sobbing and running away from us. Did you last saw? It was just all misunderstanding. We sorted her out and put her on a train.
She
you won't see her again.
Just on her period. There's some convenient excuse for everything. But no, I'm really looking forward to, because I am going to read more about this movie. I'm really interested in the symbology and the runes and all the hidden things that are there. I'm sure it won't make me appreciate the story or their motivations for getting there anymore. But I do fucking love her serving May Queen realness as he is paralyzed, burning to death inside of an unnecessarily killed bear. But hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think of how they ended that?
No, like, this is like such a... Like, you know the video where Beyonce's walking down the street and she's exploding windows and destroying cars because she's mad because she had a bad breakup?
Yes.
This is like Maleficent's version of that video. Like, I'm going to sit here in my drugged out crown of beauty and make eye contact with you as you're encased in a bear suit, burning to death, burning alive.
Yeah.
As all these other people are just screaming madness around me. It's like... It like the ultimate psychotic dark girl fantasy of a breakup.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. What did any of us learn?
Don't date anybody that resembles anything in this movie. And especially if they say, hey, come to me for a Swedish midsummer festival, you say hard pass.
I just wish I'd seen this movie in the actual midsummer because it's too late to dress like her for Halloween tomorrow.
Yeah, that would be a hell of a Halloween costume.
Yeah, I want you to get a bear suit.
I could do the bear. Do the guy looking at from the slit open bear, and you're wearing a mountain of flowers.
Yes.
Amazing.
Next year. Okay.
We'll add it to the list of awesome Halloween costumes that we never execute on.
Well, to anyone who's listening and did have that idea and they are going as that for Halloween, happy Halloween only to you.
Yeah. Tweet that shit. Share it on Instagram. We want to see it.
Yes.
But that wraps up our Spooktacular. Volume 3.
That's it.
Spooktacular 3.
There's a couple of things that we missed this year because they're like Parasite is coming out tomorrow after the Spooktacular is already over. I can say for sure that the format of this is going to change again next year. So
yeah, we're going to keep rotating until we find something that's sustainable and something that's like fun. I do think
the Spooktacular is more twist than a Shyamalan movie.
The one thing I hope that we're able to do next year that I got feedback on, I think is a good idea, is like come up with the list and release it before we actually do the Spooktacular so people can watch along if they want.
Yeah. Yeah, just
because I saw this as more of like a taste making for, but like people are like, oh, this is something like a book club. But I'm like, okay.
Yeah, no, right. I agree. I absolutely agree. But also, one of my favorite things to do when I watch horror movies and thrillers specifically is I have a lot of ones that I want to see, and it depends on the mood. Like, because
that's why
if you want to watch a comedy, it's always going to be a comedy.
Yeah.
But you have to be like, I have had a good day. Mm-hmm. So this isn't going to just make me want to kill myself or this isn't going to solidify me breaking up with my boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
Because I watch this movie and I'm like,
bear friend.
I don't know. It's yes, we'll do better next year.
But I think maybe there's a way that we can like have the core reading list and then just have some wild cards so we can adjust.
I threw out the core reading list in the forums.
Oh, did you? Okay.
But we'll try to make it more official.
Yeah. Anyway.
Any feedback you have, you can send it to us.
Yes. We will consider that for the next Spooktacular chapter 4, which is we don't have a title for yet. We'll have to figure out what other.
We've searched for spook and we'll see what's next.
Yeah. It's going to get rarefied air when you start getting into the fourth and fifth and sixth versions. We might have to start Treehouse tearing it. Just go with Roman numerals.
Yeah.
Spooktacular Ivy.
We'll just do runes, midsummer runes.
There you go. Yes. We'll work up to after the 25th one. We'll purge our most evil ones by burning an MP3 and effigy. All right. Thanks for joining us on the Spooktacular. Hope you guys had fun. Have a very happy and very scary Halloween. Until the next time, good boy.
Bye. Woo.